Welcome to Uplifting Women Podcast. This podcast is sponsored by upliftingwomen.net, as well as Holly Teska Coaching and Consulting and Regent Leadership Group. Join our co-hosts, Holly Teska and Kristen Strunk, thought partners in the world of leadership, equality, and personal and professional development. Listen as they bring stories of inspirational women and their allies who are working every day for authentic leadership, equality, and inclusion in business, education, and community. These are the stories of the people whose mission it is to ensure others are seen, heard, and respected. They have overcome challenges in the workplace and the world or supported other women in doing so. Holly and Kristen are committed to uplifting women's voices, sharing inspiration, advice, and maybe even a few laughs from women and their allies about the work they are doing to promote inclusion and equality in our world. They believe that by sharing stories of challenge and triumph, we can all make the world a better place as we inspire others to step fully into their personal leadership space. We are so happy you have joined us today for our conversation.
Welcome, everybody, to this episode of Uplifting Women Podcast. This is Holly Teska, and I'm here today with my co-host,
Kristen Strunk.
And we've got a wonderful guest for you today. Kelly Master is a captivating and anointed speaker with a beautiful gift of translating life's trials into opportunities of hope. She is an ordained minister, author, and catalyst that ignites the flames of faith in others. Her love for those hurting is boundless, as is her desire to introduce them to Jesus. Kelly is the founder and director of an NJ-based nonprofit, For Dignity, a ministry that helps women find hope and freedom. She has trained thousands of people on human trafficking, sexual exploitation, strip club outreach, and prison ministry. Author Lynn Heibel says this: "A dangerous woman is alive. She knows she is deeply loved by God and grounds herself daily in that love. She delves deeply into the truth about who she is and claims her unique temperament, gifts, passions, and dreams. She refuses to let fear stop her as she responds to God's calling on her life. And out of her fully alive heart, she radically engages with the needs of the world." That describes Kelly Master, her message, and her ministry. Kelly, welcome. We're really delighted to have you here today. And you've got an interesting background, and we had spoken a few weeks ago, an interesting story to share. Why don't you start wherever it makes sense for you and tell us a little bit about how did you get to where you are today?
Awesome. Thank you for having me, ladies. I appreciate it. And even as you were just reading that intro, I realized I'm going to need to change that because now I'm in South Carolina. I moved here a month ago. So although I'm still doing ministry up in New Jersey, I can now add South Carolina to my
list. That's perfect. Absolutely perfect.
But yes, let's see. September is National Recovery Month from Addictions, and I have, by the grace of God, 31 years clean and sober this month from drugs and alcohol, and I can say that probably was the beginning for me to start seeing things much different, more clearly, set me on a journey of healing for myself from a lot of abuse and trauma in my background, which when somebody's addicted, it's not, there's always something greater, something deeper. There are roots there. And so that recovery process began a healing process in me. And I always knew that I would work with, at least I always felt like I would work and help in some way women that were abused and sexually abused, because I was so passionate about it with my background of coming out of abuse and craziness. And I'm going to say I read a book and years ago, back in 2011, and it catapulted me into getting training and finding out more, going out there. I traveled to California to get training, to learn how to go out into the strip clubs, to bring a message of hope to women working in the strip clubs. I learned about human trafficking. I became passionate. I was ablaze with passion to do something about human trafficking. And at that point, human trafficking wasn't the big buzzword that we hear now. Many people didn't even believe it back in 2011. And I was really a forerunner with that. I wasn't the only one, but at that time, it was like breaking ground to get people to see that there really is an issue. And more than there's an issue, we can do something about it. And so there was a fierce tenacity within me that sometimes we look at an issue and it's so big, such as the topic of human trafficking or sexual exploitation or whatever fill in the blank is, and it looks so big and so overwhelming that we just shrink back and think we can't do anything. But I was determined to do whatever I could. And one of the things that I would say is sometimes we stand before a mountain and we say, what am I going to do? I can't take this mountain down. But you can take it down one piece at a time. You can break it down one piece at a time and do your part. And so I started with a woman on fire with a mission to really address the issue of human trafficking, sexual exploitation, how to keep our kids safe, and how to help victims recover. And through the years, that took on different faces and went down, turned corners with it. It grew, the mission grew, but it always remained the same in that I wanted to help women who were sexually exploited, addicted, the doors open then for the incarcerated. And it was just a passion within me. I started a nonprofit organization. I didn't start out to start a nonprofit organization. I started out to just begin to bring awareness and see change, get people to take action. And that quickly turned into a nonprofit back in 2012. And since then, I have been going into prisons. I've been going into jails, recovery homes, the streets, strip clubs with a message of hope, healing, and freedom, right? Because first of all, when I go into the strip clubs to help women, it's not, quote, to get them out. It's to bring hope and resources in. It's to meet women where they are, to build a bridge, to empower them, to uplift them, to give them what they need. And that is to get into a detox or rehab, a domestic violence shelter, whatever that need is. We're not there to tell them to change their life. We're there to empower them, uplift them, elevate them, and bring them what they need. Sometimes I say this often, you go down the street and you see a homeless person on the side of the road and you can quickly throw them a sandwich and keep on going. And that's fine if it fulfills an immediate need of hunger, but it's even better. It's even greater if you can get down in the dirt with them, if you can sit down with them and eat the sandwich with them, look them in the eye and say, how can I, first of all, let me hear you. Not let me just look at you like you're somebody that needs a handout. Let me hear you. Let me see you. Let me let you know that you have value and extend that dignity to them. So that's what I do in a nutshell.
Kelly, it's an amazing story. It brings a few things to mind for me. You talk about casting glances at somebody who's homeless or perhaps looking at women who have been exploited and end up dancing in strip clubs or women of the street in order to support themselves and live. And we cast judgments on people who have lives like that. And I think what we forget so often is maybe they didn't have much of a choice, right? If it's about survival and how do we show compassion for that? But having suffered addiction, alcoholism yourself, what was that moment like for you when you realized, I do have the power to change this and I can make something of myself that maybe I never dreamed was possible? What was that moment like for you?
It was incredible. I would say it wasn't just a moment, though. It was such a long process. And one of the biggest components of that process was a friend of mine jumping in my gutter, a friend of mine willing to jump in my dirt with me, get dirty with me, and love me until I could love myself. Because even without the drugs and the alcohol, all those things that took me to the drugs and the alcohol were still within me. And so it took somebody else to get in my corner. And all it was like, and I say this all the time, and this is one of the reasons I do what I do. It only takes one person believing in you, cheering you on. It takes one person in your corner telling you and reminding you, you got this and you can do it. And when that finally, it didn't happen right away, but when that finally broke through, yeah, it was liberating. It was no looking back. It was that oh my gosh, I have wings and I can fly. And that's why I go out and do what I do, because I'm not giving the girls their wings. They have wings. They've just been lied to. They've had labels put on them. They don't know because of the trauma that they've been through. They have wings and they can fly. So I can't fly for them, but I can cheer them on and let them know that they can. So for me, yeah, it was liberating. It was empowering. It was liberating. And like I said, there's no turning back. Once you know you're free, there's no turning back.
That's amazing that the compassion that's necessary for us to do that for others. And I firmly believe that the drug and alcoholism problems that exist in the world are largely because people just don't feel loved. They don't feel valued. They don't understand that they have contributions to make to the world and that we need them, right?
Yeah. That's perfect. That's actually the message we take into the clubs is, because some people will say, well, do you tell them they have to get out? Absolutely not. What I do is I remind each woman, just what you just said, you have value. You have value regardless of where you've been, regardless of where you are today, regardless of what's happened to you or what you may have done to others. You hold value and there's still dream and destiny within you. And guess what? You're seen, you're known, you're loved, and you matter. So that is exactly right. And I'm going to tell you what, that breaks down more walls than anything else. We take in little gift bags. We bring resources. They're all good. They're up lifting, but it's the words and the affirmation of getting into somebody's life and saying, you know what, you matter. I see you. You matter. And that changes everything.
Yeah. Very powerful message and so spot on, because people's basic needs are just having a safe place to be and somebody that loves them. It's pretty simple. And the fact that we can't figure this out is just mind-boggling to me. Right. So, yeah.
You had mentioned that you hadn't planned on starting a nonprofit and it just happened for you. So what was the catalyst for that? What were the things that fell into place for you and made you think that was the path that you were taking?
Because in the very beginning, the nonprofit's name now is For Dignity. In the very beginning, it was called Dining for Dignity. And the reason we named it such is every month I was gathering people at a local restaurant so that I could tell them about human trafficking and sexual exploitation and give them the tools they needed to prevent it from happening in their community or help see somebody rescued and restored. As I was doing that, as you ladies can probably see, I have a lot of passion. And so as I was having these meetings, it was like starting a fire in the community, a good fire of, oh my gosh, we need to do something. And so since I was at the helm, they're like, you need to turn this into a nonprofit so we can give you money so that we can get a tax deduction and we can do something more about this. So it was really other people who were like excited and on fire, who wanted to see change. And that was my goal, was I wanted to provoke action. I wanted to provoke people to take action so that we could see change. And in New Jersey, we did, from a legislation level, from in like all across the board, we saw a lot of change happen. And so as they began wanting to do more, they being the community, everybody's like, Kelly, you need to become a legal nonprofit so we can give you money. And that's basically how it started. And then I applied. I became a nonprofit in New Jersey. And then a law firm in Philadelphia heard of what I was doing and they did the work pro bono to get me as a 501c3. And so, yeah, it was when I saw the impact on the community, I realized we had to take it to the next level.
Another thing I'm aware of is many of these girls are born into this situation these days. They don't know life to be any different than what they've experienced in their lives. I'm wondering if you have an anonymous story or two that you can share about one or two of the individuals maybe that you've worked with that have really been able to make this kind of a change in their life and get on their feet and be able to live a life of purpose and value in the community. Do you have any ones that you could share with us?
Yes, that's not the hard part. The hard part is only giving a couple. Yes, I'm thinking of one girl and she's fine. I can say her name because nobody knows her anyway, and she'd be fine with it. Her name's Christy, and I met her in the strip club to begin with. And here's the thing. How we see the sex industry on TV is nothing like what it's really like. We glamorize the strip clubs and the sex industry. It's the farthest away from that. And Christy, when she was a young girl, went to Christian youth group and went to church. But when she went home, her uncle raped her and mom knew. And so the trauma, if you can only imagine the layers of trauma, what that does to a young girl. So when she became, and this went on for years. And then when she was a little bit older, she decided, I think she turned 18, she was going to go to California and become a pornography star. And so she flew to California, became a porn star. And by the grace of God, she got out of that, because many women don't come out of that one alive. And she came back to Jersey, started working in a strip club, got herself addicted, a lot of PTSD. I'll just throw this in there, and this is a fact. This isn't Kelly saying this. These are true statistics that women working in the sex industry, and most likely men as well, but I work with women in the industry, suffer from PTSD at the same rate as a returning war vet. And so she now has all this PTSD and addiction, still has the same family that she came out of, ends up in a strip club for years. And that's where we met her. And she was wounded, badly wounded, suffering from a lot of trauma. They don't trust people. These girls don't trust people right away. And so we have to build a level of trust by being consistent and not having any ulterior motives. We don't go in there, quote, to get them out and take them to church. That's not our goal. Our goal is to come in there and meet them where they are and bring the resources, the hope, and the love that they need. And over time, Christy and I got really close. She asked to go to church with me. She hung out with me outside of the clubs. And she was also a victim of human trafficking at some point within all those years of trauma. Anyway, we were able to get her into a program for victims and survivors of human trafficking. And it's a program that it's only like a week or so, but it's a real in-depth healing ministry through, I think, the Catholic Charities actually runs it. And so we were able to get Christy into that. She came back a changed woman. There had been layers and steps to that point, but that was really the big catalyst that broke it open for her. And she left the sex industry. She left dancing, not because anybody told her to, but because as you begin as a woman to realize your worth, right? Like the whole reason we're there to begin with is I don't see any value. If all I see is my value is summed up in my body, because my whole life by people's actions and inactions, you have dictated to me that this is my value. It's in my body. So now I'm going to respond from that position of I might as well work in the sex industry. I might as well sell it. I might as well, if everybody was taking it from me, let me at least sell it now. Now, when Christy began to see her worth and began to see that I am not what happened to me, I am not what others said about me, that I am whole, that I am healed, that I am worthy, she decided to leave the sex industry. And she's now doing wonderfully. She just wrote her first book. And I'll be posting that all over Facebook as soon as she sends it to me. But yeah, she's doing great. She moved out of state. She's now down in Georgia on a farm and doing great. I'm sure there's still some layers of healing. I'm not going to pretend that everything went away. It wasn't magic, but she's on her road of recovery. And so that was Christy. I have a girl named Darlene, who she was a victim of human trafficking for years. She was working in the legal side of the sex industry and being sold on the side through this whole human trafficking ring. We got her into a couple of different human trafficking safe houses until she finally found, because it doesn't happen overnight, right? Like healing doesn't happen overnight. It's a process, but she's now doing wonderful. She's in school. She's been out of that life and out of the sex industry for years. And I know that our nonprofit was able to help her tremendously. She wanted to start a soap business. We helped her become an LLC and she started a soap business. And yeah, we have many stories like that. It's a slow process because you know, your goal is, like I said, you're going in there and you're loving them and you're meeting them right where they are. And there's so many layers of trauma that it takes a while for them to even begin to trust you. And then as they do, it's a slow process, but it's beautiful. Restoration and healing is beautiful.
And what an interesting approach to the, what I'll call success of your methodology of just going in and being with, being in the moment where people are. And sometimes we forget that, right? We, by passing judgment, we say, you should be doing something. You should be doing this. Let me help you. And it becomes more about us being the helper than actually being in the space with the person and allowing that person the autonomy and the agency to help themselves and go in the direction that they really want to go. And it's just it's a really powerful approach.
Thank you.
The fact that you just allow that process to take however long it takes, I think is really a critical element of that, Kelly, because when building trust with people who don't know what it's like to be in a trusting relationship, the apprehension to allow yourself to be vulnerable with somebody, to trust them, to not expect that you have an ulterior motive, because let's be honest, if they're involved in being trafficked for sex or otherwise, they trusted somebody at some point to follow or to get it to become part of that. It's to learn to trust yourself again, to trust somebody is a really big thing.
Yeah, I agree. Something neat, if I can just interject here, was one of the things that we do to get into the clubs to begin with. We've been doing it since Mother's Day 2012, but we take in these little bags, these little beautiful little pretty bags, and they'll have earrings and lip gloss and our business card. And again, that's just to get us in the door. That's just, like, okay, here, we're bringing a little gift for you. But it's interesting because you were just talking about trust. When we began doing the process, and even now, if there's a new girl dancing at a club we've been going to for 10, 12 years, if there's a new girl, I can always tell immediately. And the reason why is when I hand her this little bag requiring nothing in return, she doesn't have to pay for it. She doesn't have to dance for it. It is her free gift. There's this look of, she's perplexed. She stands there and looks at us and begins to bring out a dollar bill. She thinks she has to pay for it. And because all night long, there's an exchange, right? You dance, you get this, you do this, you get that, all night long. And so to have these crazy wild women come in with no ulterior motive other than, hey, we just want to give you this free gift. And we want to let you know that we love you and we're here. We have free resources. If you need anything, my business card's in there, give us a call. But that trust level, I can always see the new girl, not by what she says, but by the look on her face as she stands there totally perplexed at what, you're not requiring anything from me? You just want to bless me? And it's pretty awesome to see. And then the other girls will chime in. Yeah, they'll call us the church ladies, even though we're not, they just call us the church lady. Hey, yeah, that's church ladies. They're great. They come in and they give out free gifts every month. One girl calls me mom, right? Like, she's on the stage dancing. I walk in and she yells, hey, mom. I'm like, you're not going to make any money tonight. You go calling me mom in front of everybody. But even like the other day was National Daughters Day, and I have two daughters. I honored my daughters online. And then two of the girls that I just told you about and a couple of more, Mercedes. Oh my gosh, I love these girls, but I honored them. A few of these girls that I've built relationship with over the years, and I know their stories and I know the hell, the pain, the trauma. I honored them. I said, you know what? I know you're not my daughter by blood, but I want to tell you that I love you. I believe in you. And they love that. They eat it up because they never got it. They never got it in life. They never received those words of affirmation. We just take some of these things for granted. You two are friends, and I'm sure you tell each other, hey, love you all the time. They never received that from the ones who should have been loving them, caring for them, and protecting them. And I'm sorry, I get so excited. I go all over the place with it.
You absolutely do not need to apologize. Your enthusiasm is shining through you. So we can feel it and are probably infected by it a little bit. But I'm curious, because you mentioned the transactional nature of how the majority of the population that you work with thinks. And I'm sure that extends even outside of the sex industry, legal or otherwise, but into the incarceration and the addiction. And it strikes me that women in general tend to see their interactions with others as transactional, maybe not to the extreme in the circles that you are working with and supporting and being open with. But as I even think of women in an office workplace or women in the environments that maybe Holly and I are in more regular situation, I think of even sitting in a meeting and more often than not, the female is taking the notes. More often than not, the female is the one who is trying to justify why they're in the room or trying to approach things of, I will do this. I will help you out if you can help me out, right? So it just strikes me that there seems to be a spectrum of this transactional nature, especially when it comes to women. And I'm curious if you have any insight or any thoughts on where that might come from or how we sometimes, a good majority of us, end up in that thought process of, okay, if this person does something nice for me, I have to do something nice for them. And even those types of transactions.
Yeah, I think for women, just by nature, we're nurturers, right? And I think we give more of ourselves just by nature, like just by how we've been created. At least I know for me, because I've always been this way on some level, whether it was in the work that I've just now found a passion and an excuse, but I've always been that way. And maybe by nature, but also maybe for, especially for the women that I work with, they never felt good enough. And so therefore, if I give a little bit more, if I overcompensate here, that will make up for where I don't feel good enough. But I like what you said a moment ago, where justification for being in a room, I forget how you worded it. And that was really good, because yeah, we probably, let's just get real, we're all women here, right? We overall, it's usually the guys on the golf course or in the men's bathroom or over the bar. And that's not to put anybody down. So I think there always has been a little bit more of a fight in women to get a little bit, just not to get further than just to have the seat at the table. And so, yeah, for sure. And then if you add the components with the women that I'm working with of all the trauma and all the abuse, I bet it's even harder, much harder to even feel the worth. Like, why are you, this woman, coming in here and telling me I'm worth it? Why are you telling me I'm valuable? Why are you giving me something for free? Do you need something from me? And yeah, I think part of that might be it as well. I don't know if that answered it well, but they're just some of the thoughts that I'm thinking.
Kelly, I'm curious what, when you go into these clubs and hand out goodie bags to some of the dancers, et cetera, what are the reactions of the people that own these places?
Okay, that's a good question. That's a really good question. That's why we get into some places and some places we don't. And we've tried them all, but some of the owners, and this is going to be wild, the ones that we've had the most opposition from are women owners, which I find wild. Like, why women would not want you to empower women? I don't know what their reason is, but they're the ones we've run into the most opposition. For the most part, we're fine. Usually the owner of the club's not there. So usually it's your manager and your bouncer and your DJ. And so we bring food for the guys. We bring chocolate chip cookies from Whole Foods, and we come in and we have food or coffee gift cards from Starbucks for the guys at the door, for the managers. And usually the first time, I'm not going to lie, like the first time, maybe the second time, there's a level of suspicion, because let's face it, I could be an undercover police officer. I could be somebody's wife coming in to see if my husband's in there picking up a dancer. And so of course, course, there's a level of suspicion at first. They go through our gift bags typically, and I make sure that there's nothing in there to add any kind of suspicion. I used to work in construction for years, so I'm not intimidated easily with a bunch of men, and that's to my advantage. And I just look them in the eye, and I go in there in confidence, with confidence, not arrogance, but with confidence. And I tell them, oh, are you a church? No, I'm not a church. I'm not. I'm a nonprofit. I'm here as a nonprofit. Well, what are you here for? I'm just here to empower the girls. What do you mean empower? And I look at them. I go, come on. This is a hard life. And then they break and they'll smile. Yeah, you're right. And for the most part, they let us in. We either walk the floor or go down to the dressing room, which I love going to the dressing room best, because then the girls are, they're not up there performing. They're there. You have their attention. And we give out the gift bags to each girl. We look them in the eye, because for the most part, they're not dressed. And so we don't want them thinking we're like one of the customers and we're here to look all over you. No, we're here. And the managers have been good. The managers of some of the clubs in New Jersey, they have my telephone number. And when they have a girl who needs a detox or a rehab, even now with me in South Carolina, they'll call me. And so they trust me, but that didn't happen overnight. So if I were to walk into a brand new club tonight, which I will be doing in South Carolina, and I'll have to go through this process all over again, I will go in, I'll ask for the manager. I'm confident. I look him in the eye. I'll tell him I've been doing this since 2012, and let him look through the bag. And for the most part, I'm hoping that he'll let me in. But yeah, we've not, even some of our owners are totally fine. And the owners that are not fine, the reason they're not fine is because they're doing some illegal activity. And that's fine. I won't go into those clubs. The clubs that I go into, they're legal. The sex industry is legal. And so there's things that are not legal. However, I'm not there for that. I'm there to go into a legal establishment to honor them. I'm not there to tell them they're doing anything wrong. I'm very respectful. My team is as well. I train my team. They are not to intermingle with the customers, because the reality is people will say, are they afraid you're going to take the dancers out? Honestly, they're not, because to them, dancers are a dime a dozen. They have girls every day auditioning, and they have girls all over the place. It's not the girls they're concerned about. It's the customer, the paying customer. So I don't interact with the paying customer. I try not to make eye contact with the paying customer. I'm not there to bother with the paying customer. I'm there to bless these girls and to be a source of hope and resource for them.
Wow. What courage you have, Kelly. I'm in awe. I know that you haven't been in South Carolina real long. You moved recently. What's the difference between doing this work in South Carolina, the Deep South, as opposed to New Jersey? That's a very different demographic.
Yeah, and Philadelphia, because I was very close to Philadelphia. We go to the clubs in Philadelphia. I don't know yet, because I've not gone into the clubs, but I have identified them. I've located them. I have my team. I have my bags. I'm just waiting for my husband to come down so that I have a son here. And so I can start going out and doing it. So that's with the strip clubs. I don't anticipate much of a difference. Brokenness is brokenness. Pain is pain. Trauma is trauma. It doesn't matter where you are. But and as far as the prison ministry, I've been going into prisons in Mississippi, Alabama, for years. And so that's not going to change. If anything, I'm going to be closer to some of those prisons. And so we'll see. I haven't done it yet. The first week of November, I'm looking to go out into the clubs and we'll see what happens. I'll have to send you an email.
Yeah. I would love to know how that all goes. Cause that's a whole new area for you, a whole new geography. But Kelly, this has been amazing. Your story is amazing. How, like, you've come up from, you're the phoenix that's come up from the ashes in many respects. And congratulations to you. Thank you to the friend that took you aside and listened to you and helped you to see that you had value and look at the great work that you're contributing to the world right now, which we really need. So it's truly been a pleasure. If you had any advice that you wanted to leave our listeners with, one or two things that you think are really important for our listeners to hear, What would that be?
I would say, I think as women, we tend to shrink back when we tend to shrink, and we also tend to get lost in our responsibilities, even though they're good responsibilities, whether it's a wife, mother, working, serving in the church, all these fill in the blanks. But I would encourage women to chase after your passion in your heart. Do honor yourself enough, right? We're always pouring out, much back to that other conversation. We're always pouring out for others. We're always giving to everybody else. But I believe every woman has potential in her and a purpose in her, a God-given purpose, like that she was brought forth for this reason. I know part of mine is this, right? And if I didn't do it, the Lord very well could use somebody else to do it, but I would miss out on the blessing. And so I encourage women to seek out that passion that's in your heart and don't talk yourself out of it. Don't talk yourself out of that purpose, that potential, that passion, and go after it. Even when I started this, one of the first things I did was, there's so many other organizations. Why should I do it? I just wrote a book, Fierce and Free. Why should I write a book? There's millions of books. Why should I write a book? Well, nobody else has my voice. Nobody else has my story. Nobody else has what I have in me that I was created for. Therefore, my book will be unique. My destiny is unique. And that's what I want to leave with the ladies who are listening is you have passion, purpose, and potential in you. Don't deny yourself or the world the gifts that are within you. Because I believe in you. You need to believe in you and go for it.
What an amazing way to wrap up, Kelly. Thank you so very much. Where can our listeners find you?
Oh, kellymaster.com. KellyMaster, kellymaster.com. And my book is on there, Fierce and Free. And it's, if you liked this podcast, you'll love this book because it's filled with just overcoming, inspirational, motivational testimonies and encouragements for women to do just what I just said, to step into their full potential, live with passion and purpose and joy, not just going through the motions and making their greatest impact. So KellyMaster.com, my nonprofit's on there, my book's on there, everything's on there.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for being with us today. I feel energized and enlightened. And so I can only imagine the light that you're bringing to others. So thank you so much for your time today. And we really appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you too.
Thank you so much for listening in on this latest episode of Uplifting Women Podcast. Holly and Kristen appreciate your dedication to uplifting women and look forward to you joining them again soon. This podcast is sponsored by upliftingwomen.net, as well as Holly Teska Coaching and Consulting and Regent Leadership Group. Please visit your favorite platform where you found this podcast to leave a review. If you are an uplifting woman or a man who champions women's success with a story to share, Kristen and Holly would love to talk to you. Please visit upliftingwomen.net and leave us a message.